Senate Finance Committee is in session. It is almost 1:40. Today is Monday, April 27, 2015. If you're joining us off net, we're in Juneau, Alaska, in Alaska State Capitol, Room 532, the Senate Finance Chambers. With me at the table this afternoon, Vice Chairman Michicki.
Hello, ma'am.
Senator Bishop.
Hello.
Senator Dunleavy. Senator Hoffman. Senator Olson, and we should be joined shortly by Senator Kelly, Co-Chairman Kelly, who is on other state business at the moment. We've been having conversations about Alaska's budget deficit and draws on Alaska's savings account. In FY15, we show a budget shortfall in revenue of $3.9 billion. And looking forward into the FY16 cycle, we see another shortfall somewhere between $3.2 billion and another $4 billion, depending on revenue. 90% of Alaska's revenue comes from the monetization of oil and gas resources through a variety of ways: property tax, corporate income tax, production tax. Senator Michicki, have I left any out?
Revenues from leasing acreage.
Leasing sales. With that, there were questions. We've been covering the issue of Alaska's state debt. A few days ago, we covered a cash deficiency plan. And during those conversations of the past week, we looked to Alaska's Constitution and had some questions. In Alaska's Constitution, under Article 9, Financing and Taxation, specifically on page 30, we did invite Doug Gardner from Legislative Legal, as well as the Department of Law, to our conversation today. If I could ask Bill Miltz and Corey Mills to the microphone. For the committee's information, Mr. Gardner is otherwise disposed right now. The House has went back into session, and he's following their activities. So I am uncertain whether someone from Legislative Legal is able to join us so that we can hear their perspective on Alaska's Constitution in relationship to Article 9, the financing and taxation questions. Welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you.
Thank you. And for the record, Corey Mills, Department of Law.
Bill Noakes, Department of Law.
Thank you. Senator Dunleavy, Senator Hoffman, on page 30 of the constitutions that are before you, Article 9, Section 10, where the invitation came for a legal interpretation was interim borrowing. Under Article 9, Section 10, the state and its political subdivisions may borrow money to meet appropriations for any fiscal year in anticipation of the collection of revenues for that year, but all debts so contracted shall be paid before the end of that fiscal year. Ms. Mills, the question from the Finance Committee, and I'll let them state it, comes around the definition of who is the state. We understand political subdivisions may be Alaska Housing Finance or other enterprise corporations that we underwrite and have a connection to. Senator Dunleavy, Senator Hoffman, can you elaborate on that particular question?
Sure. Periodically, we see the state used, and then at times we'll see legislature used. And it's our understanding that we are the primary fiduciary body. So when we see state can contract or state can borrow, does that mean the governor, the administration, can borrow, or does that mean all things have to come back to the state? Or one last one, theoretically, did we cede that authority to the administration possibly decades ago in some law that we aren't citing right now? Can you just help us out there? Who is the state?
So for purposes of Section 10 through the committee, Senator Dunleavy, Section 10, when it talks about the state, we think it's talking about the executive branch. There's a couple reasons for this. First, the legislature actually has chosen to implement this provision in Chapter 8 of the statutes, and it's basically borrowing in anticipation of revenues. And in that statute, the power is specifically given to the Commissioner of Revenue. and they are authorized to borrow money on behalf of the state when, in the judgment of the commissioner, it becomes necessary in order to meet appropriations for any fiscal year in anticipation of the collection of the revenues for that year, which tracks the constitutional language in Section 10.
And that's because we ceded the authority years ago. We ceded some aspect of our authority to them.
Through the chair, in terms of this provision of the Constitution, I don't know if it originally rested in the legislature, it rested in the state, and it specifically anticipates being able to cover gaps throughout the year as revenue doesn't necessarily come in as anticipated. So we view it as a provision that was always thought for the state, the executive branch, to be able to use to make sure that the appropriations that the legislature puts forward are actually able to be implemented.
Senator Dunleavy, follow up?
Yeah, theoretically speaking, can you repeat what you just said? Not the whole thing, just the last sentence. You believe that gaps, you talk about gaps. Go do that one more time.
So that this provision was specifically thought about in terms of the Constitutional Convention delegates, thinking about the fact that revenue doesn't always come in terms of when it needs to be spent under the appropriations made by the legislature.
Does it matter what the gap looks like? Does that help? I mean, if the gap is a week or 2 weeks, or what happens if the gap is 6 months?
So I don't think, through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, I don't think the gap time period matters. What matters under the Constitution is that it has to be in anticipation of the collection of the revenues for that year.
Hold that thought, please. What happens if we don't know what that's going to be because of the volatility of the price of oil?
Well, certainly you'd have to apply the specific facts or circumstances. But that language in Article 9, Section 10, is, as through the chair, Spill Milks from the Department of Law, thank you, is specifically talking about the language may borrow money to meet appropriations for any fiscal year in anticipation of the collection of the revenues for that year. So when the appropriation bills are passed, one would think you'd look exactly at what the anticipated revenues will be in applying that term. And I think Ms. Mills has mentioned that there is some statements from the Constitutional Convention. By the way, there's no case interpreting Article 9, Section 10. So, but again, when you look at the Constitutional Conventions, again, it seems to be, you know, a reference that the committee at the convention was thinking there's possibly arise occasions when tax revenues might not come up to expectations during a particular year. I mean, that's the phrase that was used, expectations during a particular year. So I think in that context, you'd be thinking about what is anticipated in the year.
Senator Dunleavy, Senator Hoffman, and just for the record, we have been joined by Senator Kelly. Thank you.
Can I just do one last follow-up?
Certainly, Senator Dunleavy.
This is going to be a hypothetical. Let's say you need $5 to cover our anticipated expenses. Let's say oil prices are low and production is low, and the cost of government is higher, we anticipate, than what we currently have. And so let's say we have $2.50 that we know we have, and then does this article then say, we don't know what the price is going to be in 3 months or 4 months. I mean, 4 months ago it was $44, and today it could be $58, $60. Can the governor draw down various pools of money that have been legislatively allocated within the state government to meet whatever shortfall he believes is going to happen?
Can you repeat through the chair the last part of that
question? I don't remember what I just said. I'll do my best. It's not you, it's me.
You're
done
with me.
using the interpretation or potential interpretation, if the legislature were to, if the cost of government is $5 and we have $2.50 that we know of, but we're not quite sure if we're going to have $3 in a couple months, which will more than cover the cost of government, or less than that, but we have pools of money allocated throughout the government in different budgets, can the governor, if the revenue isn't there, using this section or a section in the Constitution, pull monies out of allocated pots of money to help pay for day-to-day operations of the government, using language in the Constitution?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, when it comes to funds that the state has and accounts that the state has, most of those accounts are all within the general fund. So they're all available funds. And I think that's what Deputy Commissioner Burnett was talking about on Saturday, in terms of we have this cash deficiency plan and how do we do inter-fund type borrowing. The interim borrowing thought of in Section 10, if you go back to what the constitutional delegation was envisioning, they were thinking of actually taking out form of notes from banks, as has been done. And they were trying to limit that ability because they felt like the federal government was relying too much on taking out general obligation bond debt and not knowing that you could pay it back. So the whole thought was to be able to do that only on a short-term basis, only if you know or anticipate in a good faith estimation that you're going to have those revenues. I hope that answers your question.
We're kind of getting there, but I'm going to let others take a stab at it.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. To add to the discussion with what you just said, but you go on and read the rest of Article 10 in the constitutional conveners, the way it was written, I think it was, my interpretation, the way they wrote it, I think was smart, but because it says, but all debt so contracted shall be paid before the end of the next fiscal year. So I think that there in and of itself is huge, They're telling you we want good behavior and not to go goofy on our borrowing, for lack of a better term. Is that right? Or close to being right?
Senator, I would agree with that. And again, this is also in context of the Constitution. You have Section 8 that addresses state debt. And so Section 10, interim borrowing, is talking about a specific situation that could be linked to operations, whereas, you know, Section 8 is no state debt shall be contracted unless authorized by law for capital improvements, and then it goes further for veterans housing and approved by the voters. So the system there under the Constitution is not envisioning, you know, debt for operations.
Thank you, Mr. Miltz. Following up on Senator Bishop and Senator Dunleavy and the parameters, as I see it, that constrain the borrowing has to do with your fiscal year and using best practices or our revenue resource book as the threshold for how the state would calculate or the Commissioner of Revenue would calculate income and then use that revenue stream as a way to generate a backstop inside of that fiscal year. But taking that one step further, because as Senator Dunleavy's, in his example, he was using $5 and saying that $2.50 might be available, we could say the same thing about Alaska state government right now. If 90% of our revenue is generating $2.2 billion, and 120 days ago we were generating substantially more, $4 billion as an example, or $4.4 billion, and we've seen or watched the massive drop, what do we do, and how do we meet that? And so we're looking at Alaska's Constitution for guidance, and right now what the guidance is telling us is that we need a three-quarter vote to access our reserves. So I have two questions. The first one is back on Article 9, Section 10, and the follow-up. And that is, if Alaska goes out and borrows, the commissioner under his authority that we've provided, and what was that statute number that we provided the borrowing?
It's 4308, and it's that whole chapter, but it starts at 4308010.
Thank you, Ms. Mills. So if the Department of Revenue, the commissioner, exercises his power under 4308 and issues short-term bonds or some kind of financing, and the price per barrel of oil, Alaska's single source of revenue right now, or at least a majority of it at 90%, if oil falls from its current $65 down to $35 and those projections change, during the course of a year that we've already passed a budget, could they refinance the debt? So in other words, we would pay it off at the end of a fiscal year, but then could we, in the following year, under assumptions, kick the can further down the road with that debt?
Well, again, yes, but you know the statute. Sorry, Madam Chair. Bill Melks again from Department of Law. The statute AS 4308010 is really tracking the constitutional provision, providing the commissioner the authority to borrow money on behalf of the state when the judgment of the commissioner becomes necessary in order to meet appropriations for any fiscal year in anticipation of the collection of revenues for that year. So. First off, again, there has to be that judgment that you're issuing these notes in anticipation you're going to be able to pay for them through the revenues for that year.
That's my understanding, Mr. Mills. I just want on the record that we're not going to borrow kicking out in the future, that we have to pay off that debt in its entirety in one fiscal year, and that the Commissioner of Revenue does not have the opportunity to refinance looking at the next year's projections. And the Deputy Commissioner of Revenue is sitting in the audience, and he's been shaking his head one way or the other, that we can't get that on camera all the time, nor can we get it on the microphone at this time. But that's my understanding, according to the Constitution, that the debt would be required to be paid off. And so, you know, in conversations with the governor right now, because we've had trouble getting a three-quarter vote at this session to access the reserves, the governor, rightly, as well as the Senate, is concerned with how we will manage our debt. We want to make sure that people who have contracts with the state of Alaska have a degree of confidence that they'll receive the money that they were promised in previous years. So there are options on the table for the administration, given the revenue of $2.2 billion to generate short-term financing as we go forward to meet our obligations. Is that correct from the Department of Law's perspective?
For the record, and yes, I think that's true under Section 10 as well as AS 4308, which also dovetails the cash deficiency plan that the state has.
Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we're dealing with FY16's budget, and once we leave, the administration has to implement that budget. So can they borrow, so we aren't dealing with FY17's budget right now, but we know in looking at the revenue source book that that may be $2.5 billion in FY17. On the last sentence, it says it must be paid back before the end of the next fiscal year, which I assume is FY17. So can the administration borrow money with the knowledge that next fiscal year, FY17, is $2.5 billion and pay that back? I know that that causes a lot of problems, but theoretically, the money is there in FY17 to pay that note back for FY16 operations. Is that the reading, or am I reading this provision wrong? Is it talks about the next fiscal year to pay back before the next fiscal year, which is 17.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I think that language is to, you know, give enough time depending on the circumstances. I think that's the maximum amount of time. I wouldn't say that's necessarily what we want to count on, since we're you have to rely on.
I understand you don't want to count on it. I'm talking about the literal interpretation of the Constitution.
Well, and if you go to AS 43, through the chair, Senator Hoffman, 08035, it actually talks about an annual appropriation that will be in the budget. There is appropriated each fiscal year from the general fund the amount necessary for the payment of interest on revenue anticipation notes issued under this chapter. And part of that includes the approval from the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. And the notes have to be matured, I think, within 9 months. So it anticipates a really short period of time. Whether that is a possibility, it could possibly come to that. I don't want to set in stone that we could borrow $2.5 billion and put it off a year. I just can't say that on the record.
And if I could one other thing. Again, in looking at the provision, the borrowing is linked to meet appropriations for any fiscal year in anticipation of the collection of revenues for that year. So that's your linchpin where you're looking at.
That's the way it's been.
That's the way it's been for the practice in the past, but that is not, and I know that's how it's been done, but when you look at the literal writing of the Constitution, it implies that you can borrow money from next, if you can pay it back with the next fiscal year.
Mr. Mills.
Yes, Senator, I was just wondering, there's sort of two lines there. There's the borrowing. What can you borrow? It's linked to the to meet appropriations for a fiscal year in anticipation of collection of revenues for that year. So that's sort of what you're borrowing against. And then I understand that the second point would be the repayment that the senators identified, the timing of the repayment.
Thank you, Mr. Mills. Senator Majicki, followed by Senator Bishop, then Senator Dunleavy.
I believe Senator Hoffman pushed it enough for me to agree that it's quite clear that it talks about the debt, all debt so contracted shall be paid before the end of the next fiscal year. I think it says it quite literally in the Constitution. Thank you.
Senator Bishop.
He cleared it. I'm good.
Senator Dunleavy.
I'm going to muck it up, I think. So there have been tools that have been added to this since the convention was held and the Constitution ratified. Financial tools, permanent fund, CBR, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So let's pretend for a moment I'm the governor, and let's pretend I get a budget. This is all hypothetical, obviously. I get a budget of, I get an expenditure plan of $5 and a approved budget by the legislature of $2.50. And I'm the governor, and I say, well, what do I do now? Can I draw down the pools of money that are within subaccounts within the operating budget? Let's say we have a billion here, or 500 million here, or 600 million there. Is that a tool, as governor, hypothetically, I can draw down to help pay for government? What are the tools available to me to close that gap?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, Corey Mills for the record. First of all, I don't want to go into what financial tools are out there. That is not my expertise, I can tell you. And everything would depend on the circumstances, because again, you always have to look. The Constitution really contemplates the collection of revenues and making decisions based on, and borrowing or doing any sort of transfers based on that anticipation. If you're not anticipating the collection of revenues, I think you have a much harder question before you. If you're anticipating the collection of revenues and you just have to fill short-term gaps because the revenue is not coming in the right order or at the right time, it's a much easier question, and the borrowing is very clearly anticipated. So, but in terms of exactly what tools would be used in what form, we definitely, advise on that from a legal perspective, but I don't feel comfortable commenting on what those are.
If I might, Ms. Mills, there's been some suggestion that we should borrow money so that we could do something called arbitrage, where we borrow money, risk that money on the market, and try to make up the difference. As I understand it, states can't do that, that we're an entity that isn't taxed directly. And so arbitrage rules for a place like the state is different than somewhere else. Can you comment on that at all? Mr. Mills.
I don't want to comment conclusively. That's my general understanding, but I can't comment conclusively on it. That is my general understanding.
Mr. Burnett, do you have the answer to that, or Mr. Tia? Yeah. Let me get a microphone if we can.
Just temporarily here. For the record, Jerry Burnett, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. It depends on, the question was, could the state borrow and use it for arbitrage? And the question would be whether or not the borrowing was taxable or tax-free debt to the borrowers. When the state issues tax-free debt, we, for instance, our general obligation debt, we're limited on what we can earn on the investments of any proceeds from that, and we end up paying the IRS if we invest at a higher rate than we borrow at. And on the other hand, if we borrowed in the taxable market, for instance, with a pension obligation bond, then you can invest that and earn arbitrage above it. And revenue anticipation notes can be taxable or tax-free, and depending on the circumstances, there can be advantages or disadvantages both ways.
Mr. Burnett, because of the nature of the position that we're in financially, at least since they're here to defend themselves, I'll ask on behalf of the Senate Finance Committee, is the Department of Revenue, the commissioner, in his power to be able to do these things? Will he come back and speak with the legislature before he implements these plans? He's been very conservative from my perspective in trying to protect Alaska. But this particular scenario, if we went out and tried to take advantage of arbitrage for the state by using the leverage of income that's coming in, that could be seen as risky by some, or should it be successful winning the lottery?
Madam Chair, I can't speak directly for the commissioner, who is traveling today, but it's hard to imagine that a plan of that type, where you were looking at risk and arbitrage, that would not be vetted by the legislature before it was done.
Senator Dunleavy.
It was answered, but I do have another question related to Article Section 10.
Brief at ease. We're back on the record. I was consulting with Legislative Finance Director David Teal to make sure that the arbitrage conversation, as far as the availability of that provision to the administration, exists, and whether we'd gotten that on the record for the people of Alaska. It exists. The government, in reflection of Deputy Commissioner of Revenue Jerry Burnett's comments, say it's an available option, and we would all hope that the Commissioner of Revenue would come back to us if we were going to try to exercise any of those options. On the same line, again, from the conversation with the Director of Finance, David Teal, the Senate Finance Committee would like to pose the question, will the administration be limited then from the Department of Law's perspective of anticipated revenue to the $2.2 billion of anticipated revenue? Because the issue for the state of Alaska is we, our shortfall is closer to $3.2 billion for FY16 under the current budget proposal. So will the administration be limited in pursuit of borrowing should that trigger be used or that option be used to the 2.2 anticipated revenue, or can they ask for more because the revenue bonds in the Constitution may provide them 18 months worth of payment back? It may extend it a little bit even though they have to pay for it.
So Corey Mills, and I think it's based on what evidence you have of those revenues at the time, right? So right now we're basing our forecast on the spring forecast. In the fall we'll have a new forecast that might change things for that year. So I think there is an ability to change throughout the year as we have new evidence, but it's about the amount of evidence you have so you can really show that you have this good faith estimate of what those anticipated revenues are going to be.
Do we believe there's a cap on, if I went to borrow right now, I'll put it in a household perspective. If I went to buy a house, my annual income will allow me to borrow, say, up to $200,000 for a house based on a particular credit rating and everything else. So the state has enormous reserves, an outstanding credit rating, and a budget shortfall, and a need to access our reserves that are there and that will remain there without a CBR vote. Where is it a finance question that limits our ability to borrow, or is it the annual revenue? Should I ask the deputy commissioner back to the table? They had talked, when we asked them questions, I don't mean to put you on the spot, when we asked them questions on the cash deficiency, the Department of Law got brought into it several times with their ability to move forward, and they indicated it would be a collaborative effort between the Department of Administration, the Department of Revenue, and the Department of Law to make some of these decisions. And Commissioner Fisher is on a plane, and so lucky you guys. We appreciate you trying to help answer the questions for us. Brief at ease. on the record, Ms. Mills. Mr. Mills.
Whichever one of us wants to answer this difficult question. So it all comes back to the fact that Section 10 is a limiter. So the executive branch does have the power to go out and borrow on its own, but only under these limited circumstances. And that circumstance is in anticipation of the collection of the revenues. If you don't have those revenues, and revenues is not funds sitting around, revenues is revenue coming in, you can't go beyond that.
Ms. Mills, does that mean then should we be looking or anticipating revenues of $2.2 billion or $2.5 that's the limiting factor?
I would agree with that, yes.
Thank you. Senator Dunleavy.
If Section 10 is a limiter, what's Section 11? Because it seems to make exceptions to 10.
So, yeah, Section 11 through the chair, Senator Dunleavy. Section 11 is another exception. It's not a limiter on 10, really. It's more an exception to Section 8. You have to go back up to Section 8 on state debt. And it's saying that, public enterprises or different public corporations that we have, when they're bringing in their revenue, they can take out the issuance of revenue bonds based on their revenue, but they're not taking the general obligation of the state by doing that. So they're saying that's an exception. That's not the debt they're envisioning that's restricted in Section 8 and then talked about again in Section 10.
Does 11 contemplate revenue bonds being able to be floated by subdivisions?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, not subdivisions, but more public corporations of the state.
AHFC?
For example.
Post-secondary commission? What about school districts?
Talking about that.
Mr. Mills.
Through the chair. 11 is directed at revenue bonds, which are usually a project, some sort of project. So perhaps a school district is going to build a pool or something like that, a project. And they're going to have revenues in response to that project. That's the revenue bond through project. That's what Section 11 is talking about. Section 10 is the limited provision really going towards issues, as the constitutional delegates had, about shortfalls that could occur during the year as expected, anticipated revenues don't come in at the time that they thought, you can't pay your bills. And then, of course, Section 8 is the overall rule regarding state debt.
And Corey Mills, for the record, just to add on to that, Section 10 is meant to be the exception to when we can cover operating expenses, which is very different than all the other things contemplated, which are more capital improvement related.
Senator Dunleavy?
I'm thinking aloud here with you. When the only security is the revenues of the enterprise or corporation.
Senator Dunleavy, could you do me a favor for those that might be watching? Could you read 11 exceptions
sure.
so that the general public that might be following knows what we're talking about?
Sure. So this is Article 9, Section 11, page 30. Section 11 is entitled Exceptions. The restrictions on contracting debt do not apply to debt incurred through the issuance of revenue bonds by a public enterprise or public corporation of the state or a political subdivision when the only security is the revenues of the enterprise or corporation. Restrictions do not apply to indebtedness to be paid from special assessments on a benefited property, nor do they apply to refunding indebtedness of the state or its political subdivisions.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy.
And just a comment, it was my understanding that school districts could not, REAs could not incur or take on debt. That was changed slightly, I think, with a bill through partnering with AHFC on teacher housing. But I don't believe they can float bonds for operation to cover operations. I'm just trying to understand. We're in unusual times with unusual revenues and unusual expenses, and we're dusting off some tools here to see what are some possibilities, and we're trying to understand them. So I'm just trying to understand how 11 and how 11 related to 10, and I believe you tried to explain it to me, but it needs to sink in for a little while. But so a school district cannot or can? Can a municipal?
Chair, Senator Dunleavy, I would have to go back and look at that specifically. I haven't spent a whole lot of time looking at 11 recently, and talked to our education attorneys as well. But overall, these are two very separate provisions envisioned to address different circumstances. And Section 10 was really envisioned for the operations of the state and not considering any sort of specific project or building or special assessment, that sort of thing.
Senator Machicki.
So it seems to me that Section 11 might have been more useful had we had more traditional capital budgets where you could have bonded the capital projects and shifted some of the funding to the operating budget. But with the absence, essentially the complete absence of a capital budget, Section 11 really couldn't help you with Section 10. Would you say that's correct?
I agree.
Thank you. Moving on in the Constitution, and again, we've been trying to understand the ramifications of not receiving a three-quarter vote on the FY16 budget, and we've had to go to high measures to make sure that we didn't need one on FY15 so that we could make sure school districts and communities received all their anticipated revenues from the state of Alaska for FY15. And as we face either acquiring right now a two-thirds vote in the House of Representatives or not, continues to strain the Senate Finance Committee in understanding how the administration, the executive branch, can function. Saying that, if we move on in Article 9 to Section 17 on page 31, it starts talking about the constitutional budget reserve. Senator Dunleavy.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, just to make sure we captured something here, which was important to, I think, the initial conversation. So in Section 10, the state is interpreted as the administration in this particular section, not the legislature, because of AS 4308035. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, that's important to know that. All right, I'm sorry.
On page Article 9, Section 17, it's titled the Budget Reserve Fund, which is the Constitutional Budget Reserve. Is that accurate?
That is accurate.
If we go to Section B on page 31, it says, if the amount available for appropriations for the fiscal year is less than the amount appropriated for the previous fiscal year, and appropriations may be made from the budget reserve fund. However, the amount appropriated from the fund under this section may not exceed the amount necessary when added to other funds available for appropriation to provide for total appropriations equal to the amount of appropriations made in the previous calendar year for the previous fiscal year. That tells me that we could access the funds based on what at least the Senate and the House have proposed. But then it goes on in Section C to say an appropriation from the Budget Reserve Fund may be made for any public purpose upon affirmative vote of 3/4 of the members of each House in the legislature. So is there a court provision that on B that has precluded and required the three-quarter vote? Or why is it that we need a three-quarter vote when Alaska is facing such a revenue shortfall that we can't automatically draw from the CBR as it was intended to do?
Well, through the chair. C is more expansive in use of the funds because it's for any public purpose. And I believe that's where you link into the supermajority vote, because the creation of the reserve I believe was intended to provide a cushion for the state in anticipation that there'd be years in which there could be, you know, reductions in revenue. But by C, providing that if you're trying to access the CBR just for any purpose, then you have the supermajority. And then B is the majority vote, but all you can access would be the difference between the appropriations from, it would be the difference between the amount appropriated for the prior fiscal year to the amount available for the next fiscal year. So it's always only going to be a, if that standard is even met, it limits the appropriation to the difference between the 2 years.
Mr. Miltz, we have reduced Alaska's budget by over $800 million. It seems to me that we've met that criteria. Why is it that we can't, for the three, whatever the shortfall is, for FY16, why isn't it automatically withdrawn from the CBR? We're below the previous year, and we have revenue that is not coming in available to us. Why do we need a three-quarter vote? And if you need time to think about that, I'm happy to take it at ease. And is there a different way around it? Is there a way that we can limit what we're spending so that we can provide those educational dollars and health and human service dollars that are reduced from the previous year? Brief at ease. We're back on the record, 235. Mr. Mills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You'd asked a question regarding the, under the Alaska Constitution, whether or not funds could be withdrawn from the earnings reserve, I mean from the constitutional budget reserve fund based on simple majority vote, and we identified that there's two different sections, B and C. B is a majority vote, C is a supermajority vote. B, it turns on the issue whether or not the money is available for appropriations this year is less than the amount that was appropriated last year. That the determination of how you define those terms, the Alaska Supreme Court, in the case of Hickel versus Cooper, addressed that. And based on their determination, some significant funds, such as the Permanent Fund Earnings Reserve Account, according to the court, in interpreting that provision, are considered available for appropriations.
So if now, I could restate that, then the courts have decided
the
that
court the yes, Madam Chair, the court in the Hickel versus Cooper case made that determination in addressing what does it mean as being available for appropriation. And they reviewed various accounts, and a significant one, for example, is the Permanent Fund Earnings Reserve Account. They said should be considered available for appropriation. Now, ultimately, we haven't done the math ourselves personally, but we understand that based on those calculations and applying the law, as the Supreme Court has established it, that there's more available for appropriation this year than there was the prior year. And that puts you into subsection C, which is requires a supermajority vote to draw from the Constitutional Budget Reserve.
Senator Kelly, do you have a question? I appreciate that lesson in history in understanding our Constitution a bit better. The legislature has chosen not to access the Permanent Fund Earnings Reserve and is asking the legislature to vote to fund our budget from the Constitutional Budget Reserve as it was intended. Senator Dunleavy.
And just for the record, that was a Supreme Court ruling, correct?
Alaska Supreme Court, Senator.
Is there any other questions on the Constitution as it guides us through trying to close out our budget? Senator Machicki.
Just a comment, Madam Chair. The fact is the Senate passed that three-quarter vote this morning, and we just are awaiting the results of the House. So the Senate has fully funded this FY16 budget.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Any other comments from committee members? Senator Dunleavy.
This may be our last finance meeting, maybe. And again, I just want to thank the chairs, both co-chairs, for just your incredible work and due diligence and turning over every stone and helping us all understand what tools are available to us and what tools are not. Not that you guys are the not part of it, but we've had to dust off some articles in the Constitution that we haven't had to dust off in years because of our lucky financial situation, but this is information that's good for all of us and will help us going forward. But once again, I want to thank both of you folks for your hard work on this.
Any other comments from committee members? Like all Alaskans, it's our hope that today is the last day of this legislative session. I want to thank committee members. Senator Giesel has been with us almost every day this week. I want to acknowledge her presence again today. I want to thank Legislative Finance and all the folks that are over there, Mr. Teal, Mr. Carpenter, Amanda Ryder, our gavel-to-gavel hosts that bring Alaskans' legislative policy to the people of Alaska, Legislative Senate Secretaries and their staff. Everyone works very hard to make sure that Alaskans can engage in their government. And with that, I would thank each committee member for your participation. And I hope that I will not be noticing a meeting for tomorrow. With that, Senate Finance is adjourned.